Welcome back to Loaded and Rolling. I'm your host, Thomas Wasson, trucking expert here at Freight Waves. And for today, on the schedule, if you're British, your schedule, I'm not rich enough to afford my vowels and consonants, so it's the schedule. We're talking about nearshoring aging drivers, the driver experience, and how broad-scale automation is going to be impacting the industry. Super excited because the folks at C3 Solutions are going to be joining us to talk about it. And so I'm going to be welcoming on Neil McAvoy, and he is the VP of Business Development at C3. And Neil, pleasure to have you on the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, Thomas. Yeah, pleasure to be here. Yeah, so I work as the VP of Business Development for C3 Solutions. Been doing that for about 5 years now. Prior to that, I was working in trucking, distribution and parcel post for about 13, 14 years in Europe. Interested to talk about the topics today.
And, you know, talking about especially parcel coming into the trucking and then with C3, tell us a little bit about what C3 is offering in terms of the solutions and stuff. What are some of the big problems y'all are tackling?
Yeah, so our main sort of the pain points we're looking to tackle with our clients is generally to improve the planning and the execution of these large distribution centers across the US, Canada, Europe, and the rest of the world. You know, trying to bring in some order where at the moment there's a lot of chaos, and generally we do that by digitalizing and automating the schedules, and then, you know, the on-site execution when the trucks and the drivers arrive on these big DCs and hubs.
It's remarkable because I always felt like if anyone wondered if the supply chain was a miracle or not, or if you asked them if they believe in miracles, I say, look at the modern supply chain. Is this a miracle that anything showed up at a Costco or a Sam's Club because it comes from a DC in the first place? And the madness and chaos of managing hundreds of doors, hundreds of bays, as well as keeping drivers going in and out in a timely manner. I mean, that ties into what we're looking at and talking about today, which is, you know, the driver experience and nearshoring. And so, let's dive into nearshoring first. I've talked to a lot of folks about nearshoring. It's fascinating. My favorite fun fact I learned was that on the Mexico side, they like to use WhatsApp because they don't have to have ELDs. They can use paper or electronic logs, not tied to telematics. That was my fun little factoid. But from what you're seeing, especially having the software and the platform that helps with these distributions and these hubs, what is kind of the experience so far? What are you hearing?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I think, you know, and sorry to repeat this, is probably a sore point by now, but I think the pandemic kind of changed the paradigm for a lot of companies, especially those with a global footprint, right? If you had factories or some kind of distribution arm that, you know, off the continent that you're on, or even, you know, away from your big HQs and DCs, then the pandemic really caused a lot of problems to the end customer and also to everybody in between. There was a lot of uncertainty. There was a lot of cost attached to not knowing when things were available, and any lack of clarity, lack of a effective plan on when you're going to get your goods or stock available to you, is not a good thing for any business, especially like some of the businesses you talked about before, the big players in the market. But also, more recently, we've seen quite a lot of distribution in these large shipping lanes, these major canals that, you know, whether it's by geopolitical issues like conflicts, wars, or, you know, you've seen some disasters happen with, boats with containers capsizing in the Panama Canal or the Suez Canal, you know, and it causes a lot of problems, just having that uncertainty and businesses can't really deal with that for more than a couple of days, especially with the just-in-time world we live in manufacturing. Especially, you need your goods, your parts ready to go to make sure that you can keep your customers' promises happy. So, it's nearshoring and onshoring has become very much central to a lot of companies' roadmaps and strategies, just because it makes sense. From a number of reasons, but especially the ones I've spoken about. And we're talking about Mexico there, Thomas. The labor market there is not the same as it is in the US in terms of cost to a business. So, you know, you get some very, very good savings. There's a good infrastructure and technology in Mexico recently, really developed as a country for manufacturing, warehousing, distribution. So again, all the things are aligned in a good way to allow people to get into this sort of onshoring and nearshoring to protect their supply chains.
I do have a European-related question because I'm curious about, so for the United States, we have Canada and Mexico, NAFTA, North-South trade. In Europe, is it East or West? If I'm like a England or a France or a Germany, am I looking to nearshore or friendshore in Eastern Europe or maybe in the South area? Or is that something where maybe for them, they're just going to continue to ship it in their supply chains? I was always curious about the Europeans' mindset because I heard a lot of times their trucking capacity and even their capacity shifts towards the East. And then it kind of flows in opposite ways.
Yeah, I think there's a number of things there. I mean, geographically, if you kind of transposed a picture of Europe and just put it on the States, then, you know, traveling from the west coast of the coast of Portugal, there was only a west coast, and going through to, say, like an Eastern European country like Poland is not a huge distance, right? We're talking, you know, you would only get to around the middle of the US from the east to west coast. So the ability to nearshore somewhere like Eastern Europe is probably the best for the large economies of the UK of Europe, like the UK, Germany, France, the Nordic countries, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Netherlands, Belgium. So, yeah, I think the kind of plan in Europe is obviously you're trying to avoid maybe some of the Ukraine and Russia of this world for obvious reasons because of that terrible conflict that's going on. But I think Poland, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, you know, these are places with, you know, low-cost labor or lower-cost labor and also tons of space and land to do that, you know, to build factories and manufacturing plants on.
That's always a fascinating one. The startup I came from, their dev team was out of Hungary, but they're a trucking tech startup in Austin, Texas. And it was fascinating that for a lot of U.S. companies, they'll like to kind of nearshore. They've used, you know, like South American for assistance. You know, Latin America is developing quite a bit in terms of tech capabilities, as well as what's the nice word? For labor, you could do tracking.
Yeah.
But in Europe, it was fascinating to see that the Hungarian devs and the other ones in the Eastern, and I think the guys with Freight Caviar, they're over in Eastern Europe as well. Just a huge difference, but it's a similar tune, similar theme. We're thinking of the tech.
Yeah, I mean, everybody was affected. I mean, if you take the West as a group, sort of North America and Northern Western Europe, I mean, the effects were very, very similar because the shipping lanes, you kind of, you know, whether you're talking about the Far East or you know, connecting Europe to the US, there was huge amounts of delays and uncertainty around the, you know, not just the pandemic, but recent times. So I think everybody, even if it's just a secure approach that, you know, have a plan B, have a contingency plan, then people are definitely, you know, top supply chain people are rethinking their strategies about this just to make sure that they're not, you know, they don't have a single point of failure in any of their supply chains.
Well, I think that's a great point because it does, when we talk about the ripples of the pandemic, the fascinating part was not only with nearshore and we figured out, well, maybe we shouldn't be trusting so much on containerization that always worked barely enough for just in time. And unless something happens, it breaks. But driver experience, aging driver workforce. If you ask some people, there's a driver shortage. If you ask other people, it's because their labor model is completely messed up. You know, depends on who you ask. In Mexico, I heard there's a real driver shortage because they will get visas in the U.S. So they're struggling because of the nearshoring. They need to have more capacity. What are some of these trends that you're seeing as well, especially working with, you know, yard management, dock scheduling, technology solutions that are impacting driver touching locations? What are some of the things you're hearing from customers, clients, carriers in terms of age experience? We'll start with just the workforce in general.
Yeah, I think there's a few regional variations. I think you touched it correctly, Thomas. I think, you know, the Mexican problem is not necessarily the US problem. It's not necessarily the same as the European problem. I think in general, if we were to take averages, then definitely the trucking driver age average is something that's increasing. And it's something that's getting, you know, it's into areas where maybe that people looking 10 to 15 years ahead are maybe starting to get a little bit nervous. But as we stand today, I would say most of the major countries in the world of business have got problems with driver recruitment and driver retention. Now, some of it is to do with training. Some of it is to do with the, you know, the attractiveness of the role and of the job. But then some of it is just, you know, there's a lot of companies have gone into liquidation. There's a lot of companies that are, you know, like you say, getting driver force from overseas or trying to attract drivers from across borders. But effectively retaining your driver is also an important thing. And not having good conditions, not putting the driver at the center of what you do from a technology perspective, getting on and off site in these, you know, sometimes, you know, we're talking small sites, sometimes we're talking mega distribution and manufacturing plant sites. So, you know, I think there's definitely a utilization problem in there, but there's also a driver centricity thing where the driver maybe is not, you know, thought about enough when it comes to making sure that we go, you know, we pick the right technologies, we make the sites as slick and as driver friendly as possible. You know, and if we continue, I think the average age of a driver in the UK at the moment is something like 56. I think it's a bit lower in the US. It's like 52 or 53. You know, and then MIT did a David Carell, a doctor at the MIT, in charge of their Center for Transportation. He thinks it's, you know, very much a utilization problem. That if we kind of could free up the driver delays and make sure that the sites and supply chains could utilize drivers and keep them, you know, moving better and getting them on and off site and unloaded and loaded quicker, then we would not have such a significant problem. Because I think last time I checked the numbers, it was around 80,000 drivers short in the US as a whole. So again, there are many different angles to look at it, but you know, we have a problem that we need to deal with as an industry.
My favorite thing with, I got to speak with Dr. Carell, the folks at MIT have some great research. He said, I think it was like, give me 2 extra hours of utilization and our supply chain shortages and driver shortages would be fixed because of the dwell, the waits, the delays. And that kind of ties into yards, yard management and distribution operations. And I think that's fascinating because I guess at least this is one thing that surprises me talking to people outside the industry. A lot of times a driver goes and checks into a guard shack and he says, pull into this waiting area and I'm just going to call you and you're just going to wait and you're not going to know. And then also for these distribution centers, I did preloaded trailers. They would just have once a day, someone would just walk around and check once or twice a day and they send you a list. Like, it boggles the mind that these locations appear to be a pain point. Being a provider of software, working with them, what do you see in terms of how sophisticated are these distribution hubs? Because it feels like we're stuck in that 90s.
Oh, absolutely. So it is fascinating because from the store experience or even purchasing online with you know, medium, large size businesses, I mean, you know, the technology is cutting edge on most everything, right? So, you know, but then you go behind the sort of the lines of their distribution arms or their network. And when you get on site, sometimes the warehousing, you might have automation within a distribution site, but the point from the collection point or the depot or whatever to the DC and then beyond is still being done in certain aspects with, you know, in certain areas, certain regions, but it's still a global issue with clipboards and radio, walkie-talkies and, you know, spreadsheets. And it's incredible that, you know, blue chip companies and companies that turn over and, you know, huge amounts of dollars and make really handsome profits still do their, you know, one of the most crucial part of their operation, they still do it in the way you explain. Go and wait in this area, someone will come to you. You know, keep your eye on your cell phone, someone's going to ring you. You know, someone's going to come and knock the window on your truck when, they, you know, your truck's ready to go. It really is that sort of prehistoric sometimes. And I guess, you know, where C3 comes into this, we're trying to understand the customer's processes and map this into a system, meaning that when the driver arrives on a site, they're going to just be able to click a few buttons or check in with a gate guard really simply. And then the automation and the system is just taking over from that point and just making sure the driver only has to do something when that point of the process needs to kick in. And for the rest of the time, they could either be doing something else, you know, could be taking their break, could be having, you know, some downtime. Or in the case where maybe the drivers are paid by the hour, these drivers could be doing something a bit more useful for the operation or, you know, or something else like training or, you know, speaking to the guys on site where they're going to give some good information about the onward leg of their journey. So yeah, it's pretty insane when you go beyond this level. And I don't think a lot of the executives in these companies quite understand the level of or the lack of technology at this area. And like you say, I think maybe being stuck in the 90s, you're being quite kind to some of these companies, because some of it's like being stuck in in the 70s or 80s. So no, there's a huge way to go in this area. But, you know, like I said to many of our clients, is, you know, it's scary to look back once you've got a YMS or you have a doc scheduling system in place, is to look back to think, well, how did we do it? And really, you did it with the brains and the effort and the stress of a lot of your team members that you probably weren't aware of before.
Well, it seems to me like one thing I've noticed is that for a lot of these large distribution companies, as well as these large retailers, that they only seem to pay enough attention to what goes on inside the warehouse, make it look like an Amazon, automate. And then when it comes to outside, as soon as it hits that dock, it's almost like the priority just drops off a cliff.
Yeah, you're totally right, Thomas. We see it all the time. I saw it in the industry starting years in, you know, I started in 2006 working in sort of distribution in Europe. And it continued then on, and we still see it regularly. I don't think the glamour is there around the transportation side, about the sort of access to sites, the checking in, booking in, and everything that goes on a yard. I think a lot of people, it's kind of scary. There's tons of movements going on at any time, and you know, it's, you know, to bring the information to how finely poised these sites can be on, you know, losing a trailer supposed to park on this door, it parks at the wrong side of the distribution center and nobody knows it's there. You know, like there's the level of glamour versus a fully automated robotics built hub is quite different. But I think that's because, you know, understanding what a YMS or what a good dock scheduling system, what a good driver application can do to improve the driver experience, to make it more cool and let's say more modern, people don't really know. And I think that's why maybe there's a little bit of a struggle to get the budget approved, to get people at the, you know, the people that sign the checks to really buy into the fact that we need this and we need it now. You know, a lot of the times we speak to clients and we're trying to go in after a mistake being made. You know, there's something gone wrong. We a carrier doesn't want to play ball with us. We've lost a customer. We're losing loads of money in this particular geographical area. So, you know, my advice would be, you know, treat that as, you know, with the same importance as you treat your stuff that's underneath the roof, you know, in your warehousing and DCs and retail space, because it is as effective. You know, one trailer, 1 hour that goes wrong can be, you know, have a catastrophic effect, you know, in a domino style to the rest of your operations. And you don't really know it until you don't get the stock in your store, or that the customer goes somewhere else because, you know, you don't have the product that you used to, in the fashion that they were used to as one of your loyal customers. So yeah, I totally agree. It needs to be forefront. We need to put more focus into it. And to go back to the other questions, how do we make drivers want to come to the industry? How do we, you know, keep drivers happy in the industry? It's to make their lives easier, because it's quite stressful to arrive as a driver at a site with no real system or with archaic systems and expect them to just freestyle and know what they're doing. It's tough, you know. It's very tough.
That's what it's such a big hurdle for drivers, and that's one thing. The biggest complaints is all it takes is a bad week or two for a driver, and they're going to start looking for another job. Oh, I got detained 6 hours. I waited at this DC. They said it was ready. It's not ready. And I think it's fascinating because even larger carriers, so a lot of these pain points are live loads at docks. They get squeezed in. They're like, you know, dealing with people preloading trailers, unloading trailers. But even then, I was at US Express for 5 years. We had to get our own tech to make sure our trailers were empty or not, because our customers would not share that with us, or they would purposely put dunnage in it. And so it feels like, you know, is this something you see as well when you're looking at with the solutions you offer, working with customers, with carriers, with everybody? Is that something where sometimes even the carriers have to take it upon themselves to do the job of the distribution center because they don't want to adopt the stuff in there to even figure it out?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a huge tug of war going on between sort of carriers, suppliers, the retailer or the manufacturer, you know, and often it's a case of sometimes it's a little bit of, well, whoever's the biggest entity or whoever's signing the checks that kind of keep the financial things going, they tend to be the ones that make the rules. And they're kind of judge, jury, executioner, right? They're kind of, well, our system requires you to do this, but I'm not going to do stuff that you need in return. So where the technology ends up being is a little bit of a sort of peacekeeper, a middle ground where, listen, you don't have to take the word of the driver. You don't have to take the word of the warehouse worker at the supplier or the vendor, right? You know, let's get good technology that doesn't require anything other than timestamping. If we need images attached to a particular appointment or a particular load, we can do all that and take away the arguments, right? Take away this thing of, it wasn't me, it was the other guy. And then the amount of time that's wasted in, you know, people chasing invoices, people looking for feedback on loads. You know, if I saw a great one a few weeks ago where we had customers where, you know, they didn't really have a proper schedule. They kind of, things just turned up as they did. And when something was late, then they were obviously holding a door for a given period. But you had early vehicles. So vehicles that had arrived early for whatever reasons, often in large transit times, they built in some time there for traffic delays or whatever. And, you know, they didn't really have a mechanism or a way or visibility to get the early guys unloaded or loaded, you know, in that time frame. So the inefficiencies that are bred out of this lack of visibility and technology that doesn't really even up the playing field is huge. And I just think, you know, if you get the right technology, if you get something that has a tried and tested experience-based thing of the industry where, you know, it's worked in other customers, then, you know, I think that you've got to push that envelope a little bit further and start to kind of integrate it across all your operational sort of supply chain. Because like the example you've just given, it's crazy that we're all arguing about whether a vehicle is empty or full of dunnage or, you know, did you short ship because I've got a bill of lading that says I should have 20 pallets and I've had 18. The amount of time, effort, and dollar value you're paying these administrative people or managers to chase this is huge. You put that across a large company, some of those you've named, and we're talking in millions of dollars a year, all on the sort of finger pointing where there's technology out there that's going to kind of reduce that to close to zero and making those things exceptions rather than daily things you have to deal with.
Exactly. I always liked tying it in. We got about a minute left. It's like almost imagine if you go to an airport, they don't know when the planes arrive and they don't know how to work in the planes. So you're supposed to fly out, but you don't know when it comes in. Why can't a DC be like an airport? Speaking of making things better, speaking of tech, folks want to find out more about C3 Solutions, get in touch, check out your stuff. What's the best way to find out?
C3solutions.com is our website. We've got tons of really cool stuff on there. Information about our products, case studies from the industry, existing clients that have used our system and have gained benefits. And even our YouTube channel, it's pretty cool with videos and stuff for people that don't maybe like reading so much. Some really cool videos and webinars and stuff on there as well. So yeah, just have a look at that.
Definitely check it out. Neil, thank you so much for your time. Looking forward to seeing how this tech develops. It's going to be a game changer. Appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks for your time, Thomas. It was a real pleasure.
That'll be a wrap for this show. You can always catch Loaded and Rolling if you're just joining us right now for the live airing. It's going to be on Apple, YouTube, Spotify, wherever you may find your podcast. The newsletter goes out Thursdays at 2 p.m. So Tuesdays at 2 for the show, Thursdays at 2 for the newsletter. Great stuff as always. Thank you all so much for listening. Join you next week. Do it live.